Now, city leaders around the country are trying to find out ways to attract young people to their communities. Sometimes it's easier said than done.
Officials in Milwaukee have debated over a new basketball arena, a streetcar, and other initiatives to try to improve the city, and they're hoping these investments pay off.
The Milwaukee-based Public Policy Forum set out to discover what Milwaukee-based millennials really want, and some of the biggest factors for those residents include crime rates and the strength of the local economy.
Joining us now to talk more about the survey is Rob Henkin, president of the Public Policy Forum. Rob, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So what questions did you want to answer with this survey?
Well, as you alluded to in the introduction to the segment, there's been so much discussion here in Milwaukee about the types of things that we need to do as a community to be a metro area that's going to be attractive to young talent. And in particular, when we talk about and think about young talent, we often think about the millennial generation. So lots of people think they know what millennials want. And we have found that certainly there have been several national surveys that have been done. Transportation and livability are issues that have emerged and that people have done follow-up work about. But there really has not been any effort to put science behind the anecdote and to really go out and try to survey millennials to see what are the characteristics of a metro area that are most defining for them in terms of determining where they want to live, work, and play. And so that's what we set out to do in this survey. And we came out, I think, with some very interesting findings.
Well, I suppose it could also be specific to place. Do millennials in Milwaukee want the same thing as millennials in San Francisco, say?
Well, that's a fantastic point, and that was sort of one of our areas of concern that really prompted us to want to dig into this question a little bit further. Another really important distinction is between whether your goal is to retain or attract young talent. And certainly most would argue that both are important goals. But you know, those are two different questions in terms of what millennials who are already living here in our metro region really value the most and what characteristics of metro area. If indeed the goal is to attract people from both coasts, for example, what are the attributes that might be most attractive to them?
So in this survey, you talked to millennials living in metro Milwaukee. So does that make it difficult to know what would attract them? For instance, if they already lived there, they would have not had to answer that question about what attracted them to Milwaukee.
It does indeed. And in our write-up of the survey results, we have emphasized that these results really, they may be informative, they may be insightful, but they're certainly far from definitive in terms of trying to describe what we need to attract millennials from outside of the region. This survey is much better used to really try to determine the qualities that millennials already living here find most important.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the survey. How many people did you talk to?
Well, it was an online survey, 486 millennials from the four-county metro Milwaukee area were surveyed. Actually, the firm that conducted the actual survey is the Deringer Research Group out of Brookfield. We designed the survey, and we analyzed the results. And so we tried, in terms of those 486 individuals, our sampling strategy was to make the sample as proportional as possible in terms of geography, in terms of race, ethnicity, gender, etc.
And there were some surprising findings. Let's dig into those a little bit. And in terms of what people thought about in their city, crime turned out to be very important. What did people say, millennials say, about crime in Milwaukee?
Well, so one of our one of the first questions we asked was we asked our respondents to think about, we listed several different characteristics, and we asked them to think about the level of importance that they placed on those characteristics when generally determining where they want to live. And so we had a list of about 10. Crime was one of them, jobs and economy, education, public transportation, a longer list. But we found that more than four-fifths of the respondents cited crime and cited jobs/economy as important factors. Those were the two factors that were cited as important by the highest percentages of our respondents. We asked several other questions, and I think one that also stands out is narrowing in specifically on the city of Milwaukee as opposed to the metro region, we asked respondents what they liked best about the city and what they liked least about the city. And in terms of what they liked least, 51% of those who responded to our our survey cited a high crime rate. Now, whether that is perception or reality is obviously well beyond the scope of this survey, but it is certainly an issue that's on the minds of millennials.
Well, so it's such an interesting thing because there's all these assumptions about millennials not wanting to own cars, so they want reliable public transportation, they want bike paths and things like that, the livability factor. And there you have crime at the very top of the list. So does that mean some of the money that cities are thinking about allocating to those bike paths should be going instead to fighting crime?
We certainly wouldn't want to jump to that conclusion from our survey results. So let me qualify that just a little bit. So whereas I can say to you that in our survey, more than 4/5 said crime was important, I can also say to you that in our survey, just over half said that public transportation is important. We did not ask people to rate these in terms of importance. So again, it's the number of people who cited the characteristic as important. Now, we did dig more deeply. We asked a series of questions specifically geared around transportation. And here again, given I've heard and read the same reports that you have, that millennials are different in that they prefer more walkable, livable communities. They're not as auto-centric as older generations. And our survey didn't necessarily say that's not true, but when asking millennials, again, to rate in terms of importance, various transportation services, we found that greater percentages cited well-maintained and relatively uncongested roads and highways. That was cited more frequently as important than effective mass transit.
We're talking to Rob Henkin right now, president of the Public Policy Forum, talking about a recent survey on what millennials in Metro Milwaukee think is important when they're looking for a place to live.
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. If you are a millennial yourself, what do you think is most important when you're deciding where you're going to live? What is a must-have? What's a deal-breaker for you? For older listeners, what things do you look at when you're deciding where to locate, to relocate? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave us a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about a survey that asked what factors were important to millennials in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee metropolitan area, when picking a place to live.
And we want to hear from you. If you're a young person, what do you think is most important when you're thinking of moving? Is it jobs? Is it the crime rate? Is it quality of living? The cost of living, maybe? Or culture and entertainment? You can call us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave us a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing the conversation now with Rob Henkin of the Milwaukee-based Public Policy Forum. And Rob, before we went to our pledge break there, you were talking about how you didn't want there to be sweeping judgments about how to allocate money, but what would you like people to do with this information about what it seems like is most important to a majority of millennials?
Well, we think there's some very important food for thought here. So, again, particularly as these conversations have taken place in the city of Milwaukee in recent months, there's inevitably been a lot of focus on issues like transportation, like entertainment, like cultural institutions. And so, to me, what does come through here is that millennials are not unlike what I think many of us feel the general population would have said. It's sort of like the hierarchy of needs here. If you don't have a community where people are feeling safe and where they are seeing possibility and potential for economic advancement, then a lot of the other things that you're looking to try to do may be irrelevant. So I think that's a very important thing that just comes out, that in that respect, and I'm not saying there aren't other ways in which millennials may indeed be different from other generations, but in that respect, it does seem that most people are the same.
Right. So instead of reading all these articles and thinking millennials are nothing like the rest of us, we should be thinking millennials are a lot like the rest of us.
Well, so again, I wish we had, I don't know that I wish, because it probably would be very difficult to do, but we did not ask millennials to rank in terms of level of importance where crime falls, for example, as compared to transit or as compared to existence of professional sports, et cetera. What we know is, again, the percentages that believe that these are important attributes. So it gives us some insights. I think an overriding message on the transportation front is that millennials value both good roads and good transit. And I think it just, again, gives some indication of the types of things that we ought to be looking at in terms of public policies that are designed to attract and retain talent in the greater Milwaukee area.
And going back to the survey, it also found things things like restaurants, shopping areas, cultural attractions were big factors in why people choose to live in Milwaukee. So what does that mean for how to place the way we think about something like a new Bucks arena, for instance?
So this is the perfect example where people on both sides of this issue could spin the survey results the way they want. As I think I mentioned earlier before the break, a majority of people did cite the importance of amenities like professional sports when thinking about factors that influence where they want to live. However, the percentages of people citing professional sports and professional basketball in particular in our survey was less than 50%. So on the one hand, I could argue to you that that there's importance being placed here. On the other hand, when you look at the attributes that come in or that ranked higher in terms of the percentage of people citing these as important, we can see that professional sports was lower down on that list. It really depends on how you want to look at it.
If you look at this in terms of dollars and people bringing nuance into the conversations, take something, say, like the streetcar initiative. How would you take this information and apply it to that boardroom where people are deciding how much money, how much weight do we put behind this project?
Well, I think the overriding takeaway here is that we did ask a direct question on the streetcar and some other very specific transportation proposals in the greater Milwaukee area. So in this case, instead of asking what's important, we asked very simply on a scale of 1 to 5, do you support? When we asked that question about the streetcar, we found that about half said that they supported, and that roughly 30% said that they didn't support, and that the remainder were somewhere in the middle. What does that tell us? I think it's in the eye of the beholder. I think it shows that there is some solid support, but I also think when you look at how other transportation services ranked on that list, if the decision ultimately is between building a streetcar and taking good care of our local roads, perhaps the survey would say that taking good care of our local roads is more important. But I think the survey might also suggest that both are important.
Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
That was Rob Henkin talking about a public policy forum survey that asked Milwaukee millennials about important factors for relocating to a new city.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. It's Food Friday, and with the holidays just around the corner, we're going to skip the cookies and the plum pudding and serve up some pie.
We're joined now by a pie expert who has traveled the country in search of pie perfection. Valerie Lux is managing partner and chief executive pie maker at Honey Pie in Milwaukee. Valerie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how did you first get into making pies?
I started as a little girl. My mom actually taught me.
And this wasn't an easy bake oven. You were cooking proper pies?
Yep, real oven, real big pies. She taught me pie crust was the very first thing, and apple
pie. Pie crust. Now, that's something I'm still intimidated by, and I've been cooking and baking for years. Wasn't that hard to start out with the pie crust?
I think as a little, as a little girl, so I didn't know it was hard. So I just, I think you learned from your mom, and I just learned right away, so I never learned to be afraid of it. I find a lot of people are still really intimidated by pie crust.
Well, give us some non-intimidating basics here. What is the key? What are the things to avoid, I guess, in order to make a good pie crust?
Well, the first thing you need is really cold ingredients. Make sure you've got really cold butter and a bowl of ice water with you, and if your kitchen's warm because you've been cooking a bunch of other cookies or you're making dinner, throw the flour in the freezer as well. So
wow.
Make sure everything's really cold, and make sure you don't cut the fat, like the butter or the Crisco, whatever you're using, don't cut it in too small. Leave some nice big chunks of fat in your flour. That's usually where I find people go wrong the most.
So you said butter or Crisco, so you're agnostic on that point? Either one works?
Either one works. Some people are really diehard butter or really diehard Crisco. I think they're both great. They both serve different purposes. We use a little blend of both. That's my favorite, is butter and Crisco combined.
Stepping away from the practical side for a minute, you've been making pie a long time, from an early age. You've made pie for a lot of people. What is it about pie that makes people so darn happy?
You know, I don't really know. I've been asked that question many times, but it's true. It makes people really happy, and I think that's why I've really liked making it and sharing it with people, is that no one's ever unhappy to receive a piece of pie. I just think there's something really homey and warm about it, and people just love it. It's got magic to it.
Well, you work and make pies at sort of a high temple of pie making in Milwaukee at Honey Pie. What pies there do you think make people the most happy? What are some of the hit pies?
Oh, our biggest sellers are definitely our key lime pie, our Milwaukee mud pie. The banana cream is always a big hit, and a pistachio cream is another one.
You mentioned one of the pies that is on our Central Time Facebook page. You forwarded us a recipe for the Milwaukee mud pie. Can you talk us through the Milwaukee mud pie and what goes into it?
The Milwaukee mud pie is sort of a riff on a Mississippi mud pie that I came up with. And it's got a chocolate cookie base, like crust, and then I do a layer of a fudge filling, and then a layer of crumbled chocolate cookies like Oreos. And then we do our chocolate cream on top of it, and then another layer of chocolate cookies, and then some wonderful Wisconsin whipped cream on top of it.
I feel like, I don't know, there's so much awesome stuff here, you'd have to do penance after eating a piece of that.
No, it's good for your soul. So
oh, good.
Okay.
So you're trying to get us to make these pies by ourselves. So we got the crust out of the way. You're not intimidated by the crust. What about the rest of the pie? Is it difficult to master pies?
I don't think it's difficult to master. I just think it takes a lot of practice. And I think historically we used to learn from our mothers or our grandmothers. And, you know, I find among a lot of people in my generation, their parents were raising them in the 70s and 80s, and they weren't learning that anymore. So I think you just need someone to show you and then just practice it and just keep practicing it. I don't think it's actually that difficult.
Getting ready for pie season over the holidays with Valerie Lux, managing partner and chief executive pie maker at Honey Pie in Milwaukee. Got one of her recipes, a Milwaukee mud pie, linked over at the Central Time Facebook page. Let's tackle a basic little bit, if we can, Valerie, the apple pie. There's still some pretty good apples out there, getting a little late in December, but they're still selling some pretty good ones. What's the key this time of year to a good apple pie?
Well, a good apple pie is finding an apple that's tart and a little more crisp. If you get an apple that's really soft or mealy, like a Macintosh, for example, it's going to break down a lot inside the pie and almost make an applesauce, which can be really tasty if that's your preference. But find some good crisp apples. There's definitely still great apples out there. And the nice thing about Wisconsin apples is they cellar really well, so you can buy a bunch of them and keep them in a cool spot, and they'll hold, so you can make Wisconsin apple pie for like half the winter time. So get some and stock up is what I say, and then put tons of cinnamon in it. That's my favorite.
Sounds good. So we've got the holidays. We're kind of in the midst of them right now, heading into the really heavy sort of eating season part of it right now. What are some of the biggest holiday pies that you can think of?
The biggest ones we do, obviously, over Thanksgiving, it's pumpkin and pecan. And then as we move into the Christmas season, we start to see the pecan pies keep going as a really popular choice. We're selling a lot of caramel apple crumble pie right now, and we do a lot of chocolate stuff, seems to be. We have a peppermint fudge that's very popular right about now.
Oh, heard from a listener named Sean via Twitter. Sean likes your vegan items there at Honey Pie. I got to say, I've had some vegan baking over the years. Some's decent, some is just really awful. How do we keep a vegan pie from being awful?
Well, a vegan pie, if you do the fruit pies, it's actually not that difficult to do. If you just stick with a vegan shortening, Crisco happens to be vegan on its own, You just make an all Crisco crust, and then you just omit the butter from it, and it can still be really, really good. That's what we do at the restaurant for our fruit pies, and they're just kind of naturally vegan and still really good.
So, Valerie, you've spent a lot of time crisscrossing the country in search of the perfect pie. You're, I guess, on a pie pilgrimage of some kind, to keep going with our religious metaphor that for some reason we have going about pie.
Pie inspires us.
But did you find any? What was that trip like?
Oh, it's an ongoing trip. I haven't stopped. I go on little road trips throughout the year, and whenever I'm out, I always go in search of pie in whatever region I'm in. So I have found some really amazing pies around the country. I found some really terrible pies as well.
What made the good ones great?
The good ones are they're flavorful. They're most often made by hand. One of the best pies I've ever had is in Kansas City at a little pie shop called Upper Crust, and I believe, from what I know of them, I don't know everything, but it's just a couple of ladies that started making pie, doing it by hand. Their pies are amazing. They're really good ingredients, which comes through in the pie as well.
We've stayed with sweet pies so far. Do you have any favorite savory pies?
Oh, I love savory pies. One of my favorites is a twist on a French meat pie. So it's like a ground beef, and you throw some potatoes and root vegetables in it, and then you add cinnamon and nutmeg. So it's kind of a savory and spicy pie. That's one of my favorites. And then I love a cheeseburger pie, which is just basically a pie filling or a pie crust that you fill with some. We use grass-fed Wisconsin beef in our restaurants, and some good Wisconsin cheddar, really sharp cheddar. Cook up some onions, throw it all in there, and bake it. It's delicious.
I was trying to decide whether pies were out of favor now, whether it was more of sort of a 50s thing, or whether pies are really hip again. Where do you think pies fall?
I think pies are making a comeback. I think that you're seeing little pie shops pop up all over in different cities. At least that's what I'm noticing as I kind of keep my eye out on my road trips and look for stuff. There's kind of a whole resurgence in it, especially in the tradition of making them by hand. I think the pies have always existed in little diners all over the place, but they were more mass-produced or, you know, bought from a like restaurant supply place. But now you're seeing the handmade pies are starting to show up again, which I really love.
I seem to remember Twin Peaks, the TV show, was a turning point for a hipness of pie, because Dale Cooper always loved the pie at the local diner in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Did you connect with that yourself?
Well, I think I was, I remember that. I was younger when that show was on. So I think that was definitely one of the first things I saw where it romanticized pie a little for me.
And do you think people are making more pie during this pie comeback, or are they just eating it?
I think they're just eating it. Although we've been teaching pie lessons at the cafe, and we sell them out. So a lot of people are wanting to learn how to make pie. So that's been really fun. So maybe we'll see more people making it.
Valerie, I got to admit, I'm kind of lazy when it comes to pie. I will buy a crust, and I'll avoid recipes that involve a top crust, so I don't do any rolling or anything like that. Can you give me a pep talk to give it a try to roll out my own crust, my own two crusts, and make a real proper pie?
Yeah. Well, I think you need to do it just to try it for once, because it will taste so much better if you make it by hand. And you know what? I'm not going to frown on somebody buying a pie crust, because I love a pie. At the end of the day, any pie is probably a good pie. At least you're making one. But find a good recipe and give it a shot, because there's something really therapeutic and wonderful about rolling out the pie dough and getting your hands dirty and putting it together yourself. It's very rewarding when it's done.
Well, I'm sold on that. So what about a practical note? If I want to set aside time to do this thing, to make an elaborate pie with maybe two crust, a double crust, how much time do I need to set aside?
Well, to actually make the crust part, it doesn't take all that long. It takes, you know, maybe 15 minutes to make it. And then if you don't have the time, the long part of making a pie is baking it, usually, if you're making a fruit pie anyway. So you can make the crust, and you could pop it in your fridge for up to 24 hours and hang on to it. And then you can make, you know, filling takes about 5 minutes if you're buying, especially if you just buy some frozen fruit or pre-cut fruit and mix it up. That's really simple. And then the hard part is putting it in the oven and waiting for an hour for it to bake. And then you have to let it sit for 4 hours after you've baked it, so it completes its cooking.
Four hours. Who can wait 4 hours?
That's what people are always so sad when I tell them. You have to wait. You can't eat it right away. It'll fall apart.
Well, we'll leave it on that note. I'm still inspired to make some pie. Valerie, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Valerie Lux is managing partner and chief executive pie maker at Honey Pie in Milwaukee. And you can find a recipe for Milwaukee Mud Pie. That was a chocolatey thing she was describing earlier. You can find that on the Central Time Facebook page.